Catcher Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We're here again, digging into some really fascinating sources to pull out those essential insights that can help you make sense of things today. And today, wow, we're diving into the work of Devdutt Patanaik. He's this incredible scholar who really unlocks the wisdom hidden inside Indian mythology. But this isn't just about, you know, legends from ages ago. It's presented as a, well, a living framework, something to understand modern life, our relationships, even work stuff.
Exactly. Our goal here really is to show you how Patanaik helps us see these ancient stories, not as like dusty relics, but as a lens, a dynamic lens, actually, to understand ourselves, our society, the world with fresh eyes. He kind of gives us a shortcut to some deep wisdom that often feels a bit counterintuitive, maybe. And he shows how relevant these myths are for the challenges we're facing. Like right now, it's practical. Yeah, practical philosophy, not just stories. And the guide for this journey is Devdutt Patanaik himself. His background is just fascinating, isn't it? He didn't start in humanities. He was actually a medical doctor, an MBBS. Spent, 15 years in the healthcare and pharma world. And that kind of rigorous scientific corporate background, it gives him such a unique angle when he tackles these ancient texts. He connects them to today in a way that's, well, pretty unique.
Absolutely. It's that blend of science, the mythology that makes his work so accessible, so impactful. He's like a cultural translator, you could say. Mm-hmm. He bridges this gap between really complex ancient Sanskrit texts, which, let's be honest, can feel pretty daunting, and the very real messy challenges of life in the 21st century. Whether you're, you know, dealing with office politics, leading a team, or just trying to understand the people around you, Patanaik frames these myths as like sophisticated psychological tools, sociological tools even. What's really cool is how he shifts the perspective. It's not literal history, not primitive fiction. It's a mirror, reflecting these enduring human patterns, helping us get the why behind what we do.
Okay, so he's challenging how we usually think about myths. What's the big question he's digging into? What's his like core insight here?
Fundamentally, he's saying Indian mythology is, well, it's a dynamic, symbolic, psychological framework. It's how you understand reality, the human condition itself. It's way more than just a collection of old stories. Think of it as a living language. He uses the term darshan, which means a way of seeing, a whole perspective on existence.
That way of seeing, interesting.
Yeah, and it's quite different from, say, the more linear, often monotheistic, one-truth narratives we might be more familiar with from Western traditions. Patanaik shows how decoding the symbols, the characters, the patterns, it unlocks this timeless wisdom about things like dharma, which isn't just duty, but also potential, your nature. And karma, action, reaction, sure, but with layers. And moksha, liberation, but maybe not just escaping the world, but finding freedom within it. Ultimately, it's a framework to help you navigate life with more wisdom, more empathy. It's a shift from just believing something to really understanding the patterns.
That's a huge shift. And what really gets me are some of the foundational concepts he introduces. They really make you rethink things. Like, let's start with time. His idea of cyclical time is so different.
Oh, it absolutely is. It can kind of bend your mind a bit at first. Instead of one beginning, a straight line forward, one definite end, which is, you know, how many cultures see time. Indian mythology sees the universe in endless cycles, creation, then sustaining things, then dissolution, then creation again. These huge cycles called yugas and kalpas, it's like a constant cosmic dance. Ebb and flow, no final destination, just transformation, always.
Wow.
And that view, it completely changes how you think about life's ups and downs, right? Mm. Personal changes, even failures. It tells you nothing's forever good or bad.
Yeah.
Everything's just part of this bigger flow. It can be really freeing, actually. Thinking a failure isn't the end, just a phase before the next cycle starts.
So if time isn't a straight line, then maybe truth isn't one single thing either. Which brings us to his idea of subjective truth, or darshan, that really pushes back against the idea of one objective reality.
Exactly. Patanaik really emphasizes this. Reality isn't absolute. It's perceived. And it's perceived differently by different beings. Each view is valid in its own context. Like the same event, the same story. A deva, one of the gods, sees it one way. An asura, maybe seen as a demon, sees it another way. A human, another. An animal, yet another.
Mm.
The real wisdom isn't finding the truth. It's about appreciating all these multiple perspectives, trying to understand them. That concept alone is incredibly useful for, well, building empathy, navigating disagreements, just thinking more critically when everyone seems to claim they have the only right answer. To understand, you first have to try and see through their Darshan.
And holding all these different perspectives together, underlying everything, is this idea of Brahman.
Yes, Brahman, the ultimate reality. Formless, all-encompassing, the source from which everything comes. All the gods, goddesses, us, everything. Padnaik helps us see it not just as some abstract theology, but as a reminder that underneath all the surface chaos, all the differences, there's a fundamental unity.
The shared essence.
Exactly. It's a call to look past the superficial stuff and see that connection. Pretty powerful in today's world, don't you think? Whether it's team dynamics at work or bigger global issues, finding the one in the many.
That is a beautiful way to think about it. Okay, so building on that many, coming from the one, let's talk about the cosmic dance itself, the gods, the goddesses, and how they reflect us. Padnaik is great at unpacking their symbolism, starting with the big three, the Trimurti.
Right, the Trimurti. And they're not just like three random gods. They embody cosmic processes, different sides of reality. So first you have Brahma, the creator. But what's odd is he's not really worshipped much.
Yeah, why is that?
Padnaik suggests, well, once creation is done, Brahma's main job is kind of finished. He's almost detached from the ongoing drama, like the founder who starts the company but steps back from daily operations.
Yeah.
Then there's Vishnu, the preserver. He's the one who maintains order, upholds Dharma. He steps in when things get chaotic, offers his avatars. Think of Rama from the Ramayana. He's all about rule-based Dharma, follows the rules to the letter, even if it costs him personally. He stands for order, duty, principles, the kind of leader who sticks to policy no matter what.
Rigid, almost.
In a way, yes. But then compare him to Krishna from the Mahabharata. He's about contextual Dharma, strategic. He'll bend rules, interpret them creatively, sometimes even seems to break them, but for a greater, more adaptive good.
Or flexible.
Exactly. The leader who knows when to be pragmatic to get the job done. And finally, Shiva, the destroyer, but also the ascetic. He's kind of the outsider, hangs out in cremation grounds, focused on moksha, liberation. His destruction isn't about being negative. It's for rebirth. You need endings for new beginnings. He represents transformation, detachment, clearing the way.
And it's crucial, as Padnaik points out, that it's not just these male gods running the show. The goddess, Devi, as Shakti, is absolutely central.
Oh, completely fundamental. Padnaik really stresses this. The goddess isn't just a wife or secondary figure. She is Shakti, the power. The energy. Without her, the male gods are, well, basically inert. She's often linked to Prakriti, that's nature, matter, energy, action. Well, the male gods are Purusha, pure consciousness, sort of inactive on its own. Things only happen when they come together.
Right.
And she appears in so many forms. You have Lakshmi, wealth, prosperity, Saraswati, knowledge, music, arts. And then the really powerful, sometimes fierce forms like Durga and Kali, they represent protection, destroying evil, the full untamed power of nature. She keeps the world alive and kicking.
And then there's that classic struggle, the divas and asuras, which we often just think of as good guys versus bad guys.
Yeah, and Padnaik totally dismantles that simple view. It's one of his most insightful points, I think. He shows they're actually half-brothers, same father. They're like two sides of our own psychology. Both want power, wealth, immortality. The divas are sort of the haves. They rule heaven, feel entitled, but they're always worried about losing it all. Insecure.
Yeah.
The asuras are the have-nots, driven by ambition, striving, often envy, always trying to get what the divas have. He uses that great myth, the churning of the ocean, the Samudra Manthan. Divas and asuras have to work together to get the nectar of immortality, but the second they get it, they start fighting over it.
Huh. Sounds familiar.
Doesn't it? It shows how often our cooperation is driven by selfish motives and that struggle for resources, for recognition. This is part of the deal, an eternal human thing, a great metaphor for, you know, geopolitics or even just office dynamics.
Okay, we've covered some really deep concepts here, but let's bring it home. What does this mean for you listening right now? How can these ancient ideas actually be useful today? What are the main takeaways?
Padnaik is brilliant at making this practical. So one huge theme is Dharma is contextual, not absolute. Right action isn't fixed. It shifts. It depends on the person, the place, the time, the situation. Disha Kalpatra, he calls it, using the old phrase.
So no single rule book fits all.
Pretty much. It's not about anything goes, but about nuanced ethics. In your job, maybe it means your leadership style needs to change. Sometimes you need to be like Rama, clear rules, structure. Other times you need Krishna's flexibility, his strategic thinking. Especially in a crisis or tricky negotiation. Or in personal life, understanding that what's right for one person in your family might not be for another. It pushes you towards empathy, away from rigid judgments.
Okay, wisdom over dogma. Got it. What's another key idea?
Another big one is mythology as a mirror, or DARPIN. These stories aren't just out there. They reflect what's inside us. Our own struggles, our good sides, our not-so-good sides. When you read about Arjuna's dilemma on the battlefield duty versus family or the Kaurava's greed, Patanayak encourages you to see yourself in that.
Self-reflection.
Yeah, exactly. It's a powerful tool for personal growth, understanding your own motives, your fears, what drives you, realizing that the big cosmic drama, it's also playing out inside you every day.
That's a really deep way to think about personal development. And looping back to what we talked about earlier, the subjectivity of truth, Darshan, how does that apply day to day?
Well, if you really take on board that reality is multifaceted, that there isn't just one truth, but many valid ways of seeing, it naturally leads to more pluralism, more tolerance, right?
Makes sense.
In everyday life, that's huge. It means cultivating empathy by genuinely trying to understand someone else's subjective truth. Your colleague who works differently, your friend with opposing political views, your family member who sees the situation completely differently. If you can try to see their darshan, it can help resolve conflicts, build much deeper relationships, create a more understanding atmosphere around you. Just because they see it differently doesn't make them wrong. They just have a different viewpoint.
These are really practical tools, actually, and it leaves us with a thought, maybe something for you to chew on. If every mythology is someone's psychology and every psychology is someone's mythology, what stories are you living by and how are they shaping your world?
Right. Patanayak's work, it's not just about learning Indian myths. It's about a paradigm shift, moving from seeing life as just a straight line towards a goal to seeing it as maybe more cyclical, more of a journey. He gives you tools, ancient tools, really for a more meaningful, more empathetic, more resilient way of being in the world today, finding that timeless wisdom in our shared human story.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.